Welcome to the GamesNet Berlin Europe podcast. Here, we speak with extraordinary games industry professionals and listen to their story to learn all about what they've built and who they are. GamesNet Berlin Europe is the international games industry initiative of MediaNet Berlin Brandenburg, the networking association for the media, creative and digital industries in Germany's capital region. My name is Simon Oler and I will be your host for this program. Today, Florian and I are speaking with Marius Winter. He is an artist and a game designer. His last title was Say No More, a game about saying no. Recently, Marius has partnered up with his best friend Nick to make more games. And you will hear us speak with Marius about how he came up with Say No More and what saying no is about in the real world. We talk a lot about that in the beginning. We speak on his history of acquiring high-profile internships with game studios and his unusual application process. We talk about attention and what that means to him as an artist and a maker. We talk about his thoughts on game design, on fun and simplicity. And we talk about something with Monkey Island. Can't really remember that. Gotta check that out. And of course, between the lines, we hear about Mario's life. What influenced him, what decisions he made, what he likes, and what he is struggling with. Yeah, we are having a candid and thoughtful conversation, which we hope you enjoy. I had a very good time speaking with Marius today. So if you would like to, you can subscribe to this podcast on whichever platform you're listening on. And for now, please enjoy our conversation with Marius Winter.
Hello and welcome to my magnificent co-host, Simon.
Hey, it's me. Thank you very much. Hello.
And to my, well, maybe former arch enemy, Marius Winter. How are you doing? And what is the current status of our feud?
I didn't anticipate that. Hello. Hi, everyone. That's right. Florian and I were arch nemesis, but I completely forgot about that. And I don't remember why. So we are friends now. That's the
nice
status.
That's good. I also don't quite remember how and why, but there was some time when we had some, all in good fun though, some Twitter beef.
Yeah, in good fun. We have to dig it up.
Yes.
Again. And maybe then I will move the relationship status to arch nemesis again, depending on what we find.
Oh, I see. Oh, I brought something back up.
Oh.
Is this like a Facebook thing where you set your arch nemesis status? You're like, yeah. you're reunited in friendship or hot and dirty arch nemesis situation.
Inofficially on Twitter, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think I said it to Florian, but I think that you guys are good arch nemeses. And I didn't know about this either until very recently, aka like 20 minutes ago. And I actually would recommend that you pick up your arch nemesis, your feud again, because I think you can both thrive as arch nemesis. You both have these characteristics. I think maybe Marius, you are very like, like,
yeah,
this.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
And Florian is like, and I would love to see you as arch nemesis. So I support your ambitions.
Thank you. Thank you for the feedback. We'll consider that.
Good. I see. Good. Perfect intro. moving on.
Onwards.
Onwards and upwards. Marius.
Hi.
You are an artist and a game designer, and you've worked with well-known studios as well as indie studios alike. Your last title was the amazing Say No More. And You are now working on a new project with your own small studio together with your best friend, Nick. Does that give a good first picture?
Yes. I could only add that Nick is, I know him since kindergarten. We know each other since kindergarten. So now we are making games together, which is it fills my heart with joy.
Did he already join the production of Say No More or only afterwards?
Yes, we, at the time when we came, so Nick and I came up with the idea of Say No More and made a prototype. I at that time was a game designer at Studio Fitspin in 2017. And Nick was working as a social media editor for a company in our hometown, Aschaffenburg. But just in our free time, we made this project and it became a great prototype and a publisher was interested, Thunderful. And then Studio Fitspin said, hey, why not make the project at Studio Fitspin? Because I was there already and we thought it's a great idea. And Nick got hired. And so he joined Studio Fitspin and we made with Studio Fitspin together Say No More.
Nice. Yeah. So just to, for the audience who might not know about Say No More, since we picked up with that game, can you give a little intro about the game?
Sure. Say No More is a one button-ish game there. There are more buttons you can use, but there's one main button you need. And it's all you can do in this game is say no. You are an intern in an office where everyone is mean to you and you are a very shy person and they always want you to make coffee and copy these papers. And they even steal your lunchbox. And then you find a very cool mixtape that motivates you and teaches you to say no more. And when you just press one button, you can shout no and people fly away. They are impressed, like, oh, someone's just saying no. How can this be? And you get better at it and you motivate your coworkers to say no more. You start a revolution and try to get your lunchbox back. The game doesn't just deal with saying no at the workplace. It is about the fear of saying no. And Nick and I, we are, at that time, we were bad at saying no. We still are, but we are better. And other people at Studio Fitspin as well. And people who played the prototype, they also said, oh, I should say no more. And yes, this is why we made the game.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember having that feeling the first time I played it at a festival, I think. We caught up and you were presenting it. And you said, you have to play my new game. This is it. And I was like immediately blown away by it, how funny it is. And also it leaves you with that feeling of, I just have to say no more. It's like like finding that mixtape that teaches you. It has the same effect.
Can we talk about the magical power of saying no? Can you maybe start, Marius, by you have worked on this game and you wanted the game to be different at first and then the no kind of became the pivotal point. What was that experience like? And yeah, let's talk the three of us together a little bit about what saying no means to us. I would really like to hear our experiences.
Sure. So this idea of let's make a game about our fear of saying no and give you the power of saying no, this never started on paper like this. At first, Nick and I were just playing around in Unity, trying to find our next game idea. And we always make comedic games that make us laugh. And I love games with very few controls or very few buttons. And you can, and I love games where you can express yourself. And it was a game where you are a shy person. This is, of course, like we are also shy. And you are in an office environment and you can only say a couple of things. And this was yes, no, maybe. And the fourth thing would be, I don't know, what do you think? Like an office conversation game, and you only have four buttons. And we quickly noticed that saying no is the most interesting and funniest thing to say. And because we heard often in talks and like in creative processes, not just in games, that like you should, it's a good idea to focus your work to down to the most important thing. And so we dare to say, to just remove all these other things. We remove everything but saying no, because we thought, wouldn't it be interesting? You can only say no. That's a cool pitch as well. It sounds cool. Let's just do that. And so we made a prototype of where we just say no. And it just made us laugh, right? It was, in quotation marks, just a funny game. Mm-hmm. And only when we made the prototype and then showed it at festivals and at Talk and Play in Berlin, and when we got to talk to people who played the prototype, that's where we slowly understood that it could be more, because people play the prototype, they laugh, and then we talk, but we don't talk much about the prototype itself. We talk about our own relationship about the word no, and people are saying like, oh, I should say no more. And this is where at one point we noticed like, wait, we are also not so good at saying no. I remembered my time at Film Academy, where I studied for 4 years, that like I was a big yes sayer, and then kind of got burned out by that. Mm-hmm. And then took a couple steps back, like just classically, like, I'm a student now. I haven't been a student before, and I'm a student at a film academy, and there are other people who have the same interests as me. I go to every party now. Student parties every night. And also starting projects at the school and helping there out and here. And we all do this together. And sure, I help you out with animations on this project. And sure, I help you out with lighting on this little movie project. And I said yes to everything, basically, and got burned out by that after the second year, I guess.
You were the yes man, like Jim Carrey.
Maybe. I haven't seen that movie, but yeah, it's basically that. Movie,
yeah. Yeah.
Because what I didn't know by then, but now I understand that more, like it would never occur to me really to say no. And as an introvert, like at some point, I don't want to go to parties anymore. I want a healthy diet of parties. And, but it was kind of impossible to think like, staying home. There was, of course, fear of missing out, FOMO, that is there, but more the fear of, oh, maybe I'm a boring, asocial person if I don't help out all the time and socialize like the others. And
I mean, you have to go through calibration phases like that, right? I think I had the same when I studied. I was like, yeah, I should say yes more, because I wasn't used to partying, for example. And I was like, but I do want to meet more people and so on. And well, I should just say yes and see what happens, right? And I think there's merit in that. But I think as we grow older, or we are professionals in something, and we maybe want to focus our efforts, I think no has a lot to do with focus. I thought it was quite funny that to get to the no version of the game, you had to say no to yes, to maybe, and to I don't know, what do you think? You know, those were the three initial no's that you already said. You're like, no, we only want no. Niet. And I think no means focus, right?
Yeah, to me also, like listening to your own desires. How do I say that? When there's a question of, should I help out in this project right now, this person? And if I say no, and the thing is, you, inside you think, I want to say no. I need a break. I need a breather. So there's a part in yourself that already knows their answer, but you're fighting that. So you're fighting against yourself a little bit and say, no, I help that person. It will be great. It's good for relationships. And I'm not selfish. I'm not an egoistical person. I help out. So you fight a little bit yourself in this moment. And for me, the no saying is not about negativity, but like just listening to yourself and saying like, my mental health is also important.
Yeah.
This comes first, because if I don't take care of that, then I won't help anyone else in the future at all. Mm-hmm. So that I love the final message of the coach in Say No More. That speech was written by Brendan Gibbons, who I wrote Say No More with, and where the coach says that it is not about never saying yes, and it's not about always saying no. So it's all about finding a balance. But I feel like often we are taught that it is simply being positive or negative. You should be positive all the time, so you should say yes and be helpful all the time. And so there's a that's an imbalance. And I still go to parties now, and I'm okay because I'm not going to every party, right?
And you don't say yes to every project. I think, as you said, it's listening to yourself, and I think we also with the game it gets more extreme, and in our talk now what's interesting to me is we went to the most extreme of no's, I would say, where it's basically to filter out stuff and you don't let it get too close to you. In terms of taking care of yourself. But I think there's a lot of more no's, and you can get to them easier without having it as like the final boss in like, I have to say no to take care of myself. Just people will understand no. Also in a context where it's just like a simple, oh, I don't have time at the moment, or, oh, it's not a project that is interesting to me. It doesn't have to do anything with that person, or yeah, maybe you just have other things on your plate at the moment. You need to take some time off work. It really depends. But I think, the way I approach saying no, and I would consider myself also bad at saying no, but getting better, is to understand that this, like pressing the button once, like shortly, just saying no, is maybe it seems hard at the beginning, but if you make a habit out of it, people will understand like your boundaries, and like people are used to saying no, especially because also they think they have the right to say no if they don't feel like it. So they will understand usually. Maybe you can give a small explanation, but maybe it's not necessary. But in your game, you also have this, like you can press the button and hold it down and like load up a no that's like a huge, huge no. And I think the art of the no is that you don't have to get to that point where you have to always hold down the button and like give the hardest no. Just start with small no's.
Wise words. True, I think. And it's true. We went right to the most extreme no, but there is so much in between. And yeah, it's worth practicing the small ones. It's very true. It's nice.
Yeah, the way I see the game is that it's like a practice room, not for literally shouting no all the time. And there was, I love this clip. There's a American TV channel who in a morning magazine who talked briefly about Say No More, and I forgot the channel, There was one conservative woman who, like, they asked her opinion about the game. She's like, that's a bad idea, shouting no in the office all the time. This is a game where you get fired. And I love that her interpretation of the game is like, the left, right? The left is, will cause chaos and shout no all the time. Like, no, that's not it. It's more like an outlet for, especially for people who are fed up with saying yes and just let it out. This is like, the game's a safe space. We specifically from the start made it that you can't make any mistakes. There's no, you can't do anything wrong. There's no failure state. It is designed as like this. This is the power fantasy. You can say no without any, what's the English word?
Repercussions.
Yeah, right. And also I love that the game is short, because you can play it in one evening. You can have fun. It's really funny. I love the ending because it's close to my heart and it has some, I love the reactions on Twitch when we watched people play it on Twitch after we released it. And people are surprised by, like, oh no, is this game getting serious? Oh no, I didn't sign up for getting real help. And it's beautiful. And, we want people to have fun for 1.5 hours and then maybe you turn off the console and then think about a little bit about your relationship about saying no. And this is the best result I think this project could reach. And I'm glad about that.
Mm-hmm. What question for both of you? What was the in recent times or in general life? What do you remember a time where you had to say make a really hard but very valuable choice to say no? You remember a high impact no that you experienced?
Oh, yes. So last year, now it's 2021, just in terms of whenever somebody listens to this. Last year, obviously, was the year that the world had to experience COVID. And we still are to some extent. At that time, I was still living in Lithuania, working on an event called Game On, a big festival convention for games. And we had, as every project, we had some problems over the years. And I was basically in charge of the project at this point. I took it over the year before. And the year started and things started a little bit too slow for our liking. It was clear that we would need a very good year for things to be like going well overall. There wasn't much room for mistakes. I think that's not a good place to be in. And then the early reports of COVID hit and people didn't really know what was coming at that point yet. But to some extent in early March, that outlook on basically not having the year that we would need, not knowing exactly what COVID would bring. And basically that was the end of it anyway. But I had to come to the decision for myself to say no to that project, to say, no, I don't think we should continue this year. No, I personally don't want to continue this year. And that was very hard. I mean, in the end, I was somewhat vindicated in terms of there wouldn't have been a possibility anyway, but I didn't really grasp it at that moment. I just thought, well, this could cause more problems than we need. But definitely that was my hardest no of recent years that I remember. And it really like Yeah, it took a long time to get to that point to say no, and also afterwards it really did a lot with my like internal feelings, and like I had to take some time to process that no.
Yeah, for me the big no was not a response to a question, but it was just a decision to leave Studio Fitspin together with Nick to start our own thing. We left in July 2021, so like 3 months ago ish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, over 3 months. And it was a decision that that we talked about for a whole year, basically, because we were like in the most wonderful spot, because we the studio trusted us to produce Say No More, and there was a great future ahead of us to just where they trusted our ideas and what we would like to do, and it's a solid job, and let's make more games there. But both Nick and I felt like we want a different rhythm and a different vibe, and we want to be smaller, like less people. Without, there was a desire to we want to work alone for a while, basically. And it was really hard to struggle with that, because it felt like the other things, like selfish and like, what are we giving up there? And there's an amazing team and at Studio Fitspin, and I will also like the team you made Say No More with. You are leaving them as well. Like, this sounds, it took a long while to make peace with that and not feel like an egoistical person, really. And we talked for a whole year, really, before we made that decision. We made that decision in January this year. And it just felt right. We just felt like this is just a different path we want to take. And it's okay. And we are extremely happy that we made that decision.
Can you maybe name some, because this obviously nicely brings us forward in the story that you have to tell. Can you elaborate on some parameters that you put into place in your decision that helped you say, this is right, this is not egoistical? Because I'm asking because I think, many people have that problem with, you know, this is also a no that we're still talking about. And I think it's a common choice people have to make. Oh, you know, I'm leaving a team behind, or but I want to do my own thing. But so what were the parameters that for you made you feel like, oh no, this is okay, you know, we're not maniacs or egoistical people, or maybe a little bit, but maybe to the right extent or whatever. What were the things that made it okay in the end, specifically?
So for Nick and I think the most blockade we had in our head was like the feeling of, oh, you just want to do what you want, as if you can just wish for everything you would like. Like, if you want something, it's the right decision. It's hard to explain for me, but we often felt like this sounds selfish, like everybody would wish to do what they want, but they can't. It's not that easy. Like, things are hard, and sometimes you have to work on something and do things you don't want to do and get better at things and not be a child and just want it the easy way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that it feels like, oh, we just want to go the easy way. And I think the most important part that helped us get over it was because we were talking for a whole year and noticed at the end of the day, we still want that. It's as easy as that. We're looking at, what could I change about myself, about my view on things? What could I change about my position at Studio Fitspin? Maybe I don't want to be a project lead anymore and just a game design lead, but leading a project is a whole different thing. I noticed that this is hard for me, so I want to change that. And but when we talk about it a lot, then we always notice like, yeah, but at the end of the day, we just want to be alone. You know, we just want to sit together making something, and let's just remove game features and make it just about, no, yeah, that's awesome, let's do that, and just do that. And the bigger the team is, or you are in a studio which has a certain system where you have to follow a certain structure that makes sense, there it's hard to do that. Nick and I often have desires to make something in a game that we just feel this is right, but we can't explain it. Like, mm-hmm.
Right now, it's hard to explain, but you want it.
Thank you. Yeah, exactly that.
Yeah, and it's important, you know. I really believe in this message, and I think it's nice that you bring it up. And it's like, well. But there is nothing wrong with wanting something. And nobody, I wouldn't agree with you if you would say, well, that's just the easy way. I mean, no, you're trading, trading something for something. For example, you're trading stability and, I don't know, paycheck or whatever for freedom. And that's a usual trade. And it's your choice where you want to be on that spectrum. And some people want it like that. Some people want it like that. And there are places for everyone. And yeah, for me personally, as far as I've been thinking about things, it's like there is a very good reason to, let's say, make an argument on something. And the reason is I want that.
You know? Yeah.
That's actually quite good. And because not many people want something so bad that they're willing to actually make good trades for it. They're like, oh yeah, I would like to, I don't know, drive a nice car, or stupid example. Or like, oh yeah, of course I would like to, you know, be my own boss, but you know, it's just not possible. And that's okay. That means that, well, I'm not willing to pay the price or whatever, or it's too difficult, or I can't imagine it, or whatever the reason.
Yeah.
But people who can say, I want that, and I'm actually perfectly willing to go the road and do it. Well, that's something different. And now you have the right to do that. Because you know the consequence and so on. So there is nothing wrong with wanting something and being like, yeah, no, but I want it like that because I think it's good. And people are like, but give the reason. You have to have a reason. It's like, no, I just want it. Leave me alone.
Yeah. We were also talking so often about imagine we have a dream position at that studio. We could just make games there. That's awesome. And others would love to have that position and think we must be insane that we are leaving that behind. But this is not productive, really. Thinking about that angle of things, because if we go, then there is a place to fill, maybe for someone. That's also good for someone else. To get to the point again, I mentioned before, but I just wanted to say that I think the biggest thing was that we were thinking and talking about it for a year and notice at the end nothing changed about the first thought. And of course the closer we got to the decision and to the meeting where we said we would tell our bosses that we want to go, the closer we get, the more nervous we get. And we talked every day, and there was a day where we felt like this is a mistake, but went through it together. And immediately afterwards, we knew it was right. That's a good sign. That's a really good sign. The problem is you only get that after you made that step, but you feel it. You suddenly, the best thing is when you suddenly feel like, oh, this is so obvious that I made that step. It's so obvious. It's so clear now.
Yeah. Yeah. I had that same thing with my no. Deep down, I knew it was the right decision.
Yes.
So through this first part, we already picked up a few themes that we also wanted to talk about, so let's turn it back a little bit to the interns. That's something that it comes up in Say No More. That's your position in the game, in the company. But that's also something that's very interesting about you, because you're somebody who has a history of interesting and unconventional applications to become an intern. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Maybe you could tell a tale.
That is really nice. Tell a tale. That's a good wording, because it all started with Tales of Monkey Island. No, really, I had amazing. First of all, like, I had great internships. Like, Say No More is about bad internships, or it takes place in bad internships. But I had I never had bad internships, and others in our team as well. No, I had wonderful internships, and two amazing ones were in 2010. I interned at Telltale Games and made cutscenes there, mostly for Sam & Max Season 3. And 2012, I interned at Double Fine and made animatics and storyboards for then Kickstarter adventure Broken Age. And this is amazing. because there's a game called The Secret of Monkey Island from 1990. And I think I was 4 when I got this for Christmas. And it's the most important game in my life. thanks to it, I'm here right now talking with you about video games. The Secret of Monkey Island. Yeah. We played it on the Atari ST. We had for a long, long time, until I was a teenager, there was never a PC or a Windows computer at home. We at the beginning, I was born in 86. We had an Atari ST, and it was a great computer, but didn't play a lot of action games, but it did play point-and-click adventure games. And my dad played them, and I watched him play because I couldn't read at that time. And The Secret... So I watched a lot of... I saw him play Maniac Mansion and the King's Quest series and Space Quest, and I was always drawn to that. And The Secret of Monkey Island blew me away. This is like... it had a big, big impression on me. I'm focusing on Secret of Monkey Island right now because Telltale Games, where I interned in 2010, they made a Monkey Island game in 2009. It was called Tales of Monkey Island, and it was episodic. So it had 5 episodes, and each month one episode got released. And when they announced that they are making a Monkey Island game in 2009, in summer 2009, they announced it. I was blown away of two things. First, it has been a lot of years since there has been a Monkey Island game made. I don't know when the last Monkey Island game came out. It was Monkey Island 4, but it had been years, and suddenly they announced a new one. That blew me away. The other thing was, I was very
emotional.
Came out
in 2000, by the way. Monkey Island 4, 2000.
Whoa, okay.
This was 2009, right?
Yeah, so 9 years since a Monkey Island game, and it was at the time where the industry wasn't interested in adventure games anymore because they didn't sell well. And so this was exciting. The other exciting thing was I was very emotional at that moment because I just got a rejection from film school. I thought I would become a animator and applied for film school in Baden-Württemberg in Germany and the Film Academy. And I applied there and I got invited for a test where you have to make a small animation film. And I got a rejection letter. And that frustrated me because I thought I could always reach my dreams, because until then, good things happened. And I thought, I'm a great animator. Like, I made it years before, it was in 2007, I made a Monkey Island animation movie in Flash. That's like me retelling Monkey Island as in its story in a very funny way. And it was my first animation movie with a drawing pad, and people liked it online. Like, I had a small fame time at that time in Germany, and I made more animations and people liked it, and it's like, wow, I'm gonna be an animator. And suddenly I get a rejection from an animation school, or like a film school with an animation department, and like, what? And then you and then the news Tales of Monkey Island is coming out, and my immediate thought is, I need to be part of this somehow. Like, I remember that this is a feeling I have, and in the future I still have today sometimes. There's something, and I need to be part of it. I can't explain it, but of course. There's the feeling I'm going to play a new Monkey Island game. This is amazing. But a part of me was like, I need to be part of the history of this. I want to be. I didn't think of I need to join the developer team, but I want to be part of this now. I want of this side of the curtain now. And so the release of the first episode is coming up slowly, like in a month. And I made a new animation movie, a new Flash movie of Monkey Island. And I studied the trailers very detailed, and I look, okay, what's going to happen in this game? I'm interesting. What could the story be? And so I made an animation movie called I Wonder What Happens in Tales of Monkey Island Episode 1. And kind of made a very silly prediction that, of course, won't be right. But it's a silly, fun, short movie, 3 or 4 minutes short. And I made it with my friend Martin Köhler, who made the background art, because I noticed I don't like drawing backgrounds or environments. I just want to animate characters. So that's just someone else make it who's better at that. That's awesome. And so we had a small project together, and then we released it very shortly before release of the actual game. And the best thing was that the Telltale Games saw it, and the whole office watched it. They wrote that in the forums because they were in crunch mode. They were working until release very hard, and they liked it. It was like it's in the middle of crunch mode, there's like a great fan thing, and that made them laugh. And I was like, oh, great. But then the best thing came, and I got a message from Jake Rodkin, who was working at Telltale Games at the time and at Telltale Monkey Island. And he asked me if I'm interested in making official Monkey Island Flash movies for the 4 upcoming episodes, paid. Like, yes, please. Gosh. And then for the rest, so I got a rejection from film school, but for the rest of the year, I make movies for Monkey Island. That was a dream. And together with Martin and other talents, as voice actors as well, like my cousin. I lived with my cousin and my girlfriend in a in a flat, and he did some voices there. And my friend Andrei from Romania, he made music and also voice, and we made movies for Monkey Island officially. And because I now have a connection with Telltale Games, I thought, okay, I think in the back of my mind, I was scared of what happens after that. I don't want this to go. So, I think we were making the second or third movie, and one of the two CEOs of Telltale Games is coming to Germany to visit the Gamescom in Cologne. And I just hatched the plan and thought, I want to ask him if I can I have an internship, please? And so we arranged a meeting, which was easy because I already was in contact with Telltale. And he said, yeah, sure, meet me. And my cousin and I drove to Cologne, to the Gamescom, and met him for like 15 or for half an hour to talk with him and chatted. And then I just asked him like, hey, I got a rejection from the film school. I have time now. Can I intern at Telltale Games? And Dan Connors was it. And he was like, oh, yeah, sure. Yes, why not? Interesting. Let me check. And my cousin Torsten sat next to me. And he asked, and then asked Torsten as well, like, you too, right? And Torsten like, yes, please. And then Dan is like, yeah, okay, let me talk with the others and we'll figure it out. And he flew back and told the team of like, hey, figure out how to get the two Germans visas and fly them in. And they were like, what? What are you talking about? Because they make 3D games. We never made any 3D game. We were just making 2D animated Flash movies. But yeah, I'm really thankful for Dan for being that naive and optimistic. And they and they made it happen. Like, Torsten and I, at the beginning of January 2010, flew to Telltale Games and were there for 7 months and worked there and had an apartment. And made cutscenes.
Do you think Dan had a problem with saying no?
Could be. I always, you know, there's the CEO pair felt like good cop, bad cop. There was Dan Connors, and then was Kevin Bruner. And if you Google Kevin Bruner and Telltale Games, you find some bad articles about him and his bad leadership. He's a bad cop. But
I see. So you were lucky to meet the good cop.
Yes, definitely. Because it is a risk because we made 2D Flash movies with a certain humor. And then we fly in and have to learn how to use their tools. And we quickly learned them. It was beautiful. We were just making movies in Sam and Max movies inside their engine. And with each episode that came out of Sam Max Season 3, we made more and more cutscenes. It was risk, and it was great. And in the middle of the internship, I flew back to Germany to do the application again for Film Academy. This time it worked. And so after Telltale Games, I flew back to Germany, started at the Film Academy, and continued making cutscenes for other games. As a side job for Back to the Future, a little bit of Jurassic Park, and the first two episodes of The Walking Dead, the Telltale Games. Mm-hmm. And this was it was beautiful. I was able to study and earn my money by working for Telltale Games. But at the same time, it was extremely boring not working in their office, like working from home in a completely different time zone. It was not really inspiring, but it paid the bills, so I can't complain really. And that was my first internship.
Yeah.
And I met great people, and working on a Sam Max game is beautiful. There's so much freedom you have there in telling comedy. And 2012, there was the next internship.
Yes, exactly. We move on because
as
I mentioned, you are I don't know how you are a professional internship receiver.
I wouldn't call the Telltale move professional. Well, I mean, I'm very lucky. There's a lot of luck in there too, but also a great strength of myself, I would say, is my stubbornness. Like I really want that. Mm-hmm. And I just ask directly the boss and hope it works out. And there was a lot of luck as well.
Yeah, but there are, for each person who gets lucky and asks the boss the direct question, there's hundreds, thousands, I don't know, of people who never ask the question because they think there's no use, or there will be others, or I have to wait in line. There's always this question of how to get into the industry. And I mean, it seems a lot more streamlined now, but just to add a little perspective on this, in my field of like project management, basically, or on the business side of things, where I don't have any hard skills in terms of programming or in terms of art, which are usually the ones that you want to have when you want to start in this industry, then I always try to make my application as interesting as possible and not as standard. Just add a portfolio as if I was an artist or as if I were a programmer, just to show like the projects I worked on before, just like the standard way that we were taught to do a CV back in the days when I was applying for normal jobs. I don't hold myself to that standard at all anymore. I just go like completely different and just like it makes you stand out, I think. And I mean, it doesn't even go to the extent that you went.
And just a quick comment on asking at all versus not asking. That also really turns the fact that many people are bad at saying no in your favor, right? If you're the one who asks and wants a yes, basically, then that's better than not asking, because not asking is like you saying no to yourself or something. And if you ask, at least somebody else would have to say no. And as we know, for many people, that ain't easy. And they should say no more. But yeah, so you rig the game in your favor. That's just what I, with our little Noah story here, I thought that that's also worth mentioning.
Yeah, I remember also, like, I had the confidence to ask Dan Connors because there were the movies that we made before and we got hired to making them. So, and I felt like I'm, to the point you mentioned, Florian, at the point I also knew, like, I don't know how to, I never made something in 3D. Like, there's no classical position of me that I could fill it in game development. So, but I want to be there. So, so I should focus on pitching me as a person, basically. Like, I'm the right person in your team because, as you can see in my Flash movies, I care for good storytelling. This was also very important for me in the Monkey Island movies. They are silly, but we want to tell interesting stories as well, even though it doesn't seem like that. And I felt like I could be part of the team. I must show that. And Dan saw it. I'm glad.
Yeah. I have a quick follow-up question for that. When we talked last week in preparation for this, the one sentence you used a couple of times that caught my attention was, I really have to get these people's attention, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's a strong intention to say, well, yeah. I want attention, basically. Because, like you just said, I think I need to be there or something. And I want to ask you how that works for you, or how your relationship with that statement is. You made some films before, like you mentioned, and I actually watched some of your movies on YouTube. Like, I watched Rooftopping.
Okay.
I also watched The Detective. So, you know,
oh,
always,
no.
Yeah, you always have to go to an artist's early works to see his true nature. And yeah, man, that's some hilarious I thought that was really funny. Oh, I'm not supposed to curse on this podcast. We will hear a beep. Yeah, that was really, really funny.
Thank you.
And yeah, so in this context where we're at like, oh, maybe I'll be a filmmaker, maybe I'll be an animator, maybe I'll do this. And then this kind of, oh, I have to get somebody's attention. What is that for you? What's working there? What's that about?
I have a suspicion, and that is that I want their attention, and also like I want to be part of it. It's kind of very, very close to each other for me. Like it's the same. I have a suspicion, and I think it is. So the short answer is, if they see my work and they like it, I understand more about myself and what I am good at, because I'm a very unsure person still today. Because all the things that like making a flash movie about Monkey Island, which is just a retelling of Monkey Island, it is similar to our talks before about quitting Studio Fitspin. I often make things that I just want to make, and that also make me laugh. I must like it before I show it to other people, basically. And if I look at it, it's like the things I make is like, this is about video games and fun and comedy, and it looks so silly. But as a child, even in the teenage years, I think most of my early years, I thought games is just fun. It is, I shouldn't play too much video games. Video games are just a distraction. I shouldn't play too many video games or too much video games. And need to get good grades in school. Need to be good in math and German and physics and education. And I didn't have good grades. I recently actually looked up my final grades of my first 7 years in school. And you kind of see like my laziness in them. There's like an inconsistency. You would think that I would have good grades in art, but I didn't. I actually have bad grades in art, even though I became an artist. And I noticed my grades getting better when my parents pushed me to get better grades so I can get in a better school. Because the German school system, you have the elementary school, but then you have Hauptschule, Realschule, Gymnasium, and I visited all of them. Right before the end, I just wrote better grades a little bit just to get to the next thing. But I was never really interested, and I don't remember much about my education. And I still feel there are parts of me which feel bad about that still today, even though I think it's like that system doesn't work for everyone. And it didn't just motivate me. I just wanted to play video games, but I learned that this is not good. It won't be good for my career. So I think, and that interest to video games never went away, right? And my first, suddenly I made these Monkey Island movies and got attention from this big studio. And I felt like, one, I'm good at this thing. I think I can tell funny stories, and it is worth a lot it's not just a distraction. It's not a waste of time. And I think part of me thinks like I need to get their attention, and hopefully a thumbs up that reminds me like this is great stuff I'm making. That's yeah. awesome. And I'm proud of it today, but it's hard at the beginning. It's just video games.
Yeah.
So it seems to me, I just want to repeat this quickly before we maybe move on. It seems to me it's very interesting how you tell that story, and I get it. It seems to me that like with this intention of the way you tell it to me says attention equals what I just did that I'm not sure of if it's good is good. Attention kind of proves the work. Hmm. I think as an artist in general, I think in our last episode, Sebastian Stamm said, well, the worst thing is working for the drawer, mm-hmm. your chest of drawers, you don't want to, you want to make something and then put it out instead of archiving it, because people need to see it. And interesting mm-hmm. to me too, as a, you know, somebody who wants to be a writer and to do things. Releasing is difficult. So, yeah. And it's almost like, as soon if you say, okay, I want to go there and I want attention from them. And then as soon as you get that attention, then you are also in the door. You know, it kind of proves the point that it's good. And then in the same moment, you basically have the job or whatever, you know, like you described with your internship. So, yeah, it's like a double two birds with one stone thing. It's like, well, if it's good, then A, they will like it. I know it's good, and they will probably offer me more. That's that. Mm. But the motivation is intrinsic. It's more, there's the, or it's half and half. There's both the, well, I want to know if what I did is actually good. Well, I like it, so do others like it too? That type of thing. And then also, well, and plus you get work from that. So is that roughly, yeah. Maybe how you feel about it. That's what I heard. I just wanted to repeat it back, see if I understand it right.
I think so, yeah. But it can. But now that I hear it from you, it there's a danger of you depend on that, and I often feel like still feel that like I. There is a part of me who thinks like, oh, the next game idea must be great. The next game after Say No More must be great. It has to be good. And this is a very annoying fight with yourself, like a fear. It's what's it called? The
imposter syndrome?
Yeah, imposter syndrome. That is, I have that. Like, mm-hmm. like everything I see on Twitter of the other developers, and I feel like, oh, they are so good. Gosh yeah. darn it. They are so mm-hmm. good and so creative. And what am I doing? And that's,
you're shuddering in the face yeah. of their superior creativity.
And yeah. the easy good feeling is like, oh, I need some likes. Just someone who... see something of the work we are doing right now and get some thumbs up, which is not a bad thing. But like Nick and I are already posting things that we are doing right now. And, but we can't be dependent on that. But sometimes you need that. It's hard, I think, in social media right now, or there, game making or art making in general, I think. On Twitter, there's you get in contact with so many great artists, and they're inspiring. But also, you feel like, but what am I? What am I in this universe? What can I give to the universe? I don't know where I'm getting at, but you know.
Yeah, but I think you have proven to yourself in a way, and definitely to the world. I think that. You have something to offer, and yeah, I think this isn't some kind of pep talk or anything, but your output already proves, I think, that you are doing well in that. And there might come days, weeks, or phases in your life where you feel like that isn't the case. But I think people like you will always bounce back in a way to showing it or proving it once again. So the feeling might take some time to get rid of that imposter syndrome. But it's important to come back and have good output again. So I think you definitely had that.
Thank you, Florian.
Let's move to the next internship. So I think the way we will go now is like go through all the stations in your career, and then when something comes up, we will spend some time in it. So the next internship was also kind of a non-standard application process. Tell us about that.
So the first Spark is very similar. I was studying at Film Academy doing animation, and then the Kickstarter pitch from Double Fine suddenly appeared, and Tim Schafer's pitching a new adventure game that he and Double Fine would like to make. And it's a Kickstarter. And make a classic point-and-click adventure game, like Monkey Island. And it was a very famous Kickstarter campaign, like the first big video game Kickstarter campaign that made headlines. And
yep.
I thought I need to be part of this. You know, like I was at Telltale Games. They made a Monkey Island game. I met people who were working on the original Monkey Island, but Tim Schafer's company and Tim Schafer himself, he worked on the first Monkey Island game. I need to be part of this. So, I need to apply for an internship. And first I made, no, I didn't make, but I wrote a concept of a movie I sent them. I was again in the thought, I can't really offer like a concrete skill, like animating in Maya or in 3D or something like that. I can just try to prove that I'm the right person at the team. I thought to tell this in a video, but never felt right while writing that script for this video. Like I always thought, I still do that with every project today. Like I always think of the person having the end result in front of them. Like how do they react to this final thing? And why would Tim Schafer watch a movie of one fan? Mm-hmm. And then I thought I make a game. It's a playable application. It's like a point and click adventure game. It looks like the first Monkey Island game. So it's a tribute to Monkey Island, a love letter as well. So the setting is like already showing like, this is a love letter. And I thought if I get a rejection, and I hope I don't, then I could at least say like, at least I gave them a love letter. And so I made this small application, and it's a playable application where you're a person at Double Fine at the secretary desk. And then Marius comes in. So myself, but you don't play me. You play the secretary, and Marius applies for an internship, and the secretary, you choose what to ask Mario. So it's an interview, but you are the person interviewing Marius, and this is how you get the information from Marius. Mm-hmm. And I made this in Flash, and I made this while I was actually still working for Telltale Games. So I had a couple cutscenes I had to make for the second episode of The Walking Dead, but I spent 10 days on this application thing in secret. I still made the deadlines for the Walking Dead cutscenes, so all good. But I really felt bad and like, to have to do this in secret. I made this and sent it to Double Fine. and said, please don't share it online. This is just for you. And then it got leaked. It was like, I worked 10 days on it. I was tired and I just sent it out and then went for a walk and came back and then found out it got leaked from Greg Rice, the producer at Double Fine. Greg,
this is... Wait, you sent it and like after coming back for a walk, they already leaked it?
I thought the same, by the way. I was wow, they were quick with the leak, man.
No.
I was just out for a walk.
I sent it out midday. I don't know, but it was the same. I don't remember, actually. Maybe it was a day or something. But I remember going out for a walk, coming back, and then Greg Rice. I said Greg Rice like arch nemesis style, Florian. Yeah. like we are friends now.
Yeah, shaking your fist.
Damn you.
Greg, I told you because one, I don't want Telltale Games to find out. But the fun thing was Sean Vanneman, who was working at Telltale Games and one of the leads on Walking Dead, he's like, Marius, did you just make a game for Ron Gilbert? That's awesome. And like he was very supportive. It was scary, but oh, they played it. Okay, cool. And we talked later, basically, and I went to bed and I woke up the next morning and then there's articles. There's a Kotaku article and other articles about this German who made an internship, playable internship. Like, I was so scared. Like, this, I don't like this at all. I mentioned it before. Like, if I make something, I always make something for someone specific. It could be also a big audience, but this wasn't for an audience. So.
Mm.
Oh, there were writing mistakes and in there, and I felt uncomfortable.
Not the ideal type of attention there, or the ideal group. That that's a big difference.
But it was also okay. And then there was I'm the person who made an application, and I was confused because I thought while making the application, I thought, they must get so many playable applications. Makes sense. It's a gaming company. Why aren't there other playable applications? And I guess I was the first one that got leaked or something like that. And then I got an email and Tim wants to talk to you. And I got a chat with Tim and, they then gave me an internship. And I flew to San Francisco for 3 months and slept on the couch of Greg Rice.
Damn you. Damn you. It was a love letter. How dare you leak it?
And Greg's thank me later. No, it was all good, but it was a shock for me. And I'm glad that it's perceived, so positively. And then I got an internship and so I fly to Double Fine. I get there, morning meeting. You see this in a documentary. I'm in the documentary and there's actually the question, what will Marius do actually? Who knows? We don't know yet. so Telltale Games, there was again, because I don't blame them because I also don't know, I don't know what I do. But I think I fit here. We'll figure it out. And so I'm very, very thankful that they made that risk. But also the timing was good. There was this big, the Kickstarter documentary thing. It was so big and just storytelling wise, it was also a good thing. They thought oh, let's bring in an intern from Germany who made the application. It's a good story for the documentary. And I'm so glad for these thoughts. And I'm writing the right moment. I'm very grateful for that. And at first I actually learned there to animate in Maya with Ray Crook and made some animations. But then they noticed I can very quickly make animatics in Flash and nobody was making them there. And so. And Tim had a lot of scripts written for cutscenes, but there are no visuals. So I became the person who does storyboards and animatics. And this was my job then there. And it's awesome. And so I was there and I'm in a documentary. It's weird. And Dan from Telltale Games, I wrote him a letter when this thing got leaked and explained and but Dan was so supportive as well. It's like, oh, that, no, that's awesome. Like, cool. Good luck.
He can't say no. Why would he?
Yeah. And Kevin Bruner didn't say anything.
I was wondering just now. At the same time. Oh, so funny.
And okay. That was a great chapter. And I worked with Tim Schaaf and did some animatics after that for some trailers.
Yeah.
And it was a great time.
So this concept, oh my God, this is so, you are a person who makes these incredible efforts to get to the point where they want to be, but you're so humble about everything that it's really mind blowing to me how you can almost apologize for overshooting like this every time, because to me it feels like those are some of the most interesting and like mind-blowing ideas to get where you want to be, and you just basically show your talent, and you already stick out from the crowd a lot. So this concept of applying for something that you want by just showing who you are and just like sticking out from the crowd, it's amazing. So we were just in election season here, so maybe people who want to become something in politics should just show show to people some good politics, and then they might get voted for. I think that would be, if politics worked like your applications, things would be amazing.
Yeah.
If you can't walk the walk, don't talk the talk. Says the guy on a podcast, but you know.
You said something very interesting, and I think, because I wanted to talk to you about game design, and I think you said something very, very true. You said that you think a lot about your audience and who you make something for, and you also think about how will that person feel when they see this. And I think that's a sign of good game design, at least from my experience and also talking to game designers, putting yourself in that person's shoes and asking yourself, what will that person feel in the moment that they see this? What will be their reaction? What will be the thing that they want to do next? So what should be the next step in the game? So I think you have a lot of concepts in your mind already that are very professional in terms of how the craft works without having learned it. So you're learning it by doing. So talk a little bit about your approach to game design, maybe.
Yeah, I agree. Like you said, I mostly think of the end result first and then try to go backwards, which, because it defines a clearer goal. Also sometimes not just a game, but also what could be a headline about a game. So like when we decided to make Say No More just about no, right? We thought, imagine the headline. That's a game where you only can say no. Like this is a valid argument that we use to, because at that time we also thought, can we make a game like this? Shouldn't games be more? Mm. But think of the headline. That's a great story. Oh, that's awesome. So, that is really a strategy I do a lot. But, the hard part then will be, okay, how do you reach that goal? And this is always tricky. Tricky. I'm not sure. I sometimes feel disconnected when I say I am a game designer in a classical sense. There are often things I do that I can't explain. So why I do them and why they work for me, at least. I follow my gut feeling a lot. And, but I noticed, like, I'm real, I'm more in the narrative spectrum. Mm-hmm. And the classic game design with mechanics, that is still new for me. I don't just like making games with few controls. I also like to do them because it's, in quotation marks, less things to do. Mm-hmm. It's not easy to make a one button game. Definitely not. But at least in my mind, it's much easier to think what the end result is when you press that button.
Yeah.
And I also like making more games for people who are afraid of controllers, because controllers are so intimidating. There's so many buttons.
Yeah.
I want to invite people to games who feel like they're not part of games because they are bad at them, playing them. But then I always want to say, no, you're not bad at games. We just made two hard games for a certain audience.
Yeah.
But yeah, the game design process, I noticed, like, I love doing animatics, drawing pictures of an end result, what the end thing is, and basically go backwards.
Yeah,
it's hard sometimes. Like, it's I underestimate a lot how complex things are, or how hard it is to make a good UI, or how hard it is to say what you think in your head. Suddenly, sometimes there is an idea in my head stuck because I can't put it into words or into drawings. It's hard. But yeah, I think I love mostly concepting things, and also like voice acting, but it's a different thing.
Quick question. How do you get things that you've, like, ideas in your head that you find hard to express? What's usually the way to end up finding them and expressing them so that you can share them or work around them or whatever?
I lock myself in and focus on only that thing and spend a lot of energy in that and ignore everything else.
So it's hard, but it's doable. You just have to put extra effort in.
Yes. But in a sometimes bad way. Like, I really mean it when I'm stubborn. Like, I'm stuck in this one thing and forget everything around me. But games are complex. You have to think of multiple things. And also, sometimes you have to cut things as well. And sometimes you can't fulfill everything. Yeah. This is like, so I can eventually get something on paper, but I think this is the way I do things. There are different things I can work on, and the thing I work on, I give always 100%. And yeah, I'm so focused on it, and I have like tunnel vision, but like in sometimes a bad way.
I think that's part of it. I really think that, I mean, most artists, especially the great ones, had to pay a great price for what they were doing.
Hmm.
Not, you know, saying that everybody should just burn themselves, but yeah, it, well, depends on what's helpful, you know. But it's possible to say, well, yeah, in a bad way, but that's normal. Or you could say, well, I want to be really balanced, which I think is also a great ambition. But real balance all the time is kind of the opposite of extreme. And if you're working on extreme ideas or extremely good or extremely complex or extremely worth thinking about, well, maybe extreme measures are sometimes needed. I mean, it's just what works for you, I think. But I totally get the thought of like, maybe there's a better way that's not so extreme or whatever. But if that's
what you mean, yeah. There's always the inner struggle. Like, I want all the things to be 100%, and they have to be great.
And the working process also, you know, that should also be. And I should be a fairy, you know, flying in a chill manner across the meadows while I'm punching out mad good ideas, you know. Let me just have everything. That's how I feel usually. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
I understand that.
We still have one more studio, basically, that you started back in the day. So from being an intern at bigger studios, you came back to Germany and decided, I think that's also a theme. We saw that when you talked about Fitzbin. You decided to start your own studio together with Benedikt Hummel. Hello. Mm-hmm. From me to you, if you hear this, or from us to you.
Hi, Dana.
That's basically when we met. Also, it was sometime in 2013, which was when I just started to work in games. And that was a very interesting festival. We met in Kassel at Spiel Salon. That was the name of the festival. And you were at a very interesting artistic period, I would say. So can you describe a little bit what happened at that festival and what you were doing in terms of projects at that moment?
Yeah, this is now 2013 is the time where I finally became a game designer. Until then, I was a filmmaker, and it took many years, really, when I got finally into game making. And this is when I met my friend Benedikt Hummel at the Film Academy. He was also studying animation there, or interactive media. And I also switched to interactive media. And funny thing, the way we met was at a party. new students were welcomed at the Film Academy. And guess what? He recognized me from my voice from the Monkey Island Flash movies. He is like, oh, you made the Minecraft Flash. We're like, what? Who are you? I'm Benedikt. I make Flash games. And you can make games in Flash as well. And so it was like only weeks before the Double Fine internship, where we both joined a game jam and we made a game together called The Visit. And we loved it. This was really funny making a game. It feels like a Mario platformer, but the moment you jump on an enemy, which you are used to, the enemy dies and then police comes and then suddenly you're in court and you have to defend yourself and then you get into jail and then you get out of jail and then you meet the family of the crab you killed. And that was our first game and it was like, we need to make games together. And so in December 2012, we said we want to make more games together, but we are also studying. We always have something to do. And there's there's rarely a moment where you feel like, oh, today let's make a game together. And we found a webpage called One Game a Month, and they motivate you to make one game each month in 2013. Not working a whole month, just make something, anything. A simple interactive, even in a day, for the idea. And we said, let's do that challenge. And we did that. So 2013, every month we made a game. So in 1 year with Benedikt, I made over 12 games and they were simple. And we didn't have much time because again, we were also studying at the time and only sometimes worked on a weekend or one day. And then we made funny games. And the last game in December was made in Kassel at the film festival. We got invited and we said, let's make our last game there in a bar in public. So like people can watch us make it. That was really fun. And the best part is we were making assets there and Sososovsky, a fantastic indie developer. He was at the festival and he had his equipment with him and he offered to make the music, the soundtrack. And so he sat at our desk, made a soundtrack, and then we need voices for the soundtrack and people coming over to just sing a couple lines for a techno song. And Florian also was part of that. That was like a techno song, and it's because our game was a party itself, and you had a great line, Florian.
Yes, my party is good, party is bueno, I think was my line.
Yes.
Do you remember the melody?
Or? Oh,
It was something like, I forgot the most important thing because you said bueno. Benedict and I gave ourselves a name. After the second game, we thought we need a name and we were called Major Bueno. That was our name. It was just, we need a name. So shortly before release of our February game, and we just took our names, Marius. So my nickname then was Marius and Bena. And I suggested Major Bena. And Bena said, that's too close to my name. Let's go Bueno. Okay, cool. And that's it. We didn't think too much about it. And it was Major Bueno. It was cool. And we made, it was wonderful. Name. It was beautiful. And we had a Twitter account and built automatically a small fan base. I thought, there it is, the indie dream. It was also the time where I also learned that there's an I learned the term indie, like indie developer, independent small teams making games. And we thought, this is our future. And, probably after our studies, we will open up a studio. Yeah, it's going to be it. Let's be indie rock stars. And so we made one game a month in that year. And then after I had my diploma, Benedict was still studying, but he took a 1 year break. And so we had a 1 year. So I was done in 2015 and he had time for a year. And so we got into an office room with other developers. We shared an office room with Naval together. Two other indie game developers. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Major Bueno is now doing the big things and we make big game and we worked on our first project and it's like a remaster of our small Flash game and small things happen like the other stories. There was Gamescom and we thought, let's go there. Let's go to the Devolver booth and show them the demo. And we didn't have a ticket. So Naval gave us their ticket for that day. So we got in with different name tags and met Devolver and showed him a demo. And he was like, that's awesome. Let's talk. And we're like, yeah, Devolver. Yeah, that's awesome. And we made a mobile game then. But at that time, Devolver hasn't published any mobile games yet, and they didn't want to risk that yet. But at least we were in contact. And first mistake, we just went 100% in there, had like a side job and thought, we will figure things out. We don't have budget yet. We have our side project. We make games somehow and then we sell it and become rich. And let's not overcomplicate things. And very unprofessional. This is big learning. Like at some point we were like, this doesn't work out financially. You know, should have funding for your project. And we switched the project. We noticed like this one project is too expensive. Let's make it smaller. But here's the other thing. Benedict and I kind of went apart emotionally a bit. I don't know how to describe it, but the thing was that what we also didn't anticipate is like, it's different when we work 24/7 together, not 24/7, but full time.
Yeah.
Instead of let's make some games a whole year, but like only on weekends.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's a whole different dynamic. And there's one thing that I noticed that cooked inside of me. Benedict liked to do multiple projects and also other private projects. And I want to focus on, you know, like 100% one thing. And I want to focus on one thing.
Yeah.
And there's a jealousy growing inside of me. There's actually in a relationship not just a lover, but also between friends, there can be jealousy, right? But and here I had jealousy over Benedict. And not focusing on our project alone, but others. And this didn't work out, basically. like, this is what he wanted to do more. And, I wanted to focus on one thing and I got impatient and I pushed him also a lot mm-hmm. into this direction. And, by the end of the year, we felt like this does not work out. And we said like, okay, let's separate. It is like, we also noticed because we have very, very close friends today still. We only had a break then, but we are very good friends today. But we noticed like, okay, you working together is also a relationship and it's not just sitting together wanting to make fun games, but there's more to it and there are different interests and that didn't work out. So we separated after that. But it's okay. That's a great learning really. And, we made one more game together. It was by the end of 2020, the end of Flash, right? End of 2020, they turn off Flash and we thought, let's make one more Flash game. And we made one about the end. It was really cool.
Oh, so yes, something that, because obviously we like to share things that we talk about with the audience. So we will definitely try and link to something, but obviously a very sad thing, your games from that Major Bueno period are lost in a way because there's no Flash anymore.
Yes, some games Benedict ported to HTML. So there are some mm-hmm. games you can play still, mm-hmm. Even on phone. And ooh. Sometimes I think Newgrounds is also working more and more on emulators. So they might come back. But so they're not lost forever. And eventually they will reappear. I'm certain. We both want to make this happen because it would be like the end of Flash is really sad. Like the whole creativity that happened when Flash was born, it was amazing. Newgrounds and such.
One thing that, so we hope that the whole archive basically comes back, but we briefly talked about it. So one thing that we will link to, and so Simon will also know what exactly that song was, because I know that the whole soundtrack is still online somewhere of the Party Bueno game that was made back then. So I will find it. I think it's on Sauce SoundCloud somewhere. And at least that's where I found it at one point. And bookmarked it somewhere. And we will link to the soundtrack. And then Simon can also party like we did in 2013.
Party is good. Party is bueno.
Exactly.
And it's important to me to hear your singing performances, as you know, Florian.
It's so good.
Yes.
Yeah. Florian is actually a great singer.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Period. Yeah.
Period. Yeah. We can at some point between our not so long podcast relationship, I started. Simon has a thing where he sends voice messages instead of typing or calling.
Yeah.
And I have a few people who do that. So I usually don't. But if people do that, then I also do that back. And at some point, I started to sing while I was recording a voice message for him. And from that moment on, sort of a thing that I needed to think of a song to start each voice message.
Yeah,
off.
I requested that's that awesome. Each voice message please start with a song. And it's been a reliable operation that we have going on.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So those important. Will not be linked in this episode.
Not today, maybe one day. But like I said, I think you're really good at that. So that's important. I mean, who has the opportunity to have a safe space, like you said earlier, to just sing for another dude, you know? Like that's kind of worth having.
That's beautiful.
It is beautiful.
I want to move on to some quick questions. to round out the episode from my part. So I'm not actually sure. This is a recurring segment, so the questions will be the same. But I'm not sure if you like business events that much because you come from the artistic side. But if you do, is there a specific games event or event overall that you, that's your favorite one for doing business?
For doing business?
Yep.
Yeah, I think I don't like doing businesses at events. you have to shout and it's like your poor throat.
Yeah.
At first I thought I'd say immediately a Maze Festival. I love that festival so much and I can't wait for it to come back as at a real location. I love being there with all the people and everyone makes strange games and it's beautiful. But making business, I rather approach someone specific and pitch it to them. The way Say No More, we pitched that by writing before GDC, writing people and make appointments at GDC. But it's not because of GDC, but just its location. I mean, I definitely want to meet people and show them a specific thing that we prepared just for this.
Yeah.
Pitch.
Okay. The next question is the other side of that. So it was somewhat in that answer already, but what's your favorite event to hang out at?
Maze Festival.
Yes. And I really hope we will hang out at the next one in person again. What makes Berlin a unique place for you?
For me personally, it's, I think, two things. One, the food. There's so much food, authentic food, from all around the world. And I just love food so much and it's great in Berlin. And the other thing is I love how left it is. By specifically, I mean, I personally love to, depending on the day, I have a very strong feminine side and then I dress up differently or wear makeup and I feel safe in Berlin to be that. Because it's nothing special here. You know?
Yeah.
It's hard in Berlin to
really stand out.
To stand out, exactly.
That's what I thought.
I love that here. And
you can stand out, but everybody kind of stands out a bit, or many people stand out a bit. So the average standing out is not so much. Yeah.
Yeah. We talked about I need to get attention, right? Mm. I actually, really, that it is. I actually feel like I most of the time I don't want to get any attention at all.
Yeah.
I want to stay hidden. This getting attention is from specific, people, right? But
that's an important distinction. Yeah.
Yeah, but in Berlin, I feel like I can be outside without, without making something a thing.
Mm.
I like that here.
We will move on to my last quick question, which is how do you define success?
That's a hard one, really, for me. It depends on the project, really. Like, I think it's a big success if I tweet out a certain GIF to pitch Say No More and it gets, and then Rami Ismail retweets it and it gets a lot of likes. That's success because that is what I wanted for this tweet.
Yeah.
For Say No More, I felt we were successful, when we watch the Twitch streams and see the reactions of the Twitch players at the end of the game and the chat. And the streamers talking about the topic while the credits roll, that success there.
Yeah.
And the big success that Nick and I now hope to achieve is to reach a point where something sells so that we can continue making games that we want to make, right? Financial stability, basically, to just make what you want and have the time to make what you want, because art is so hard to predict. And making time plans, I mean, the game industry is still young in that. Like, I'm so jealous of the film industry about their schedules and production schedules. I still think making games is so hard because everything takes longer.
Yeah, so those were my quick questions. I think Simon might have a few of his own.
Yeah, I have a few quick questions to round this out. I've been really enjoying sitting back and listening to this. I think I spoke a bit less in this episode than compared to normal episodes. So that's been very nice. And your stories are great. So thank you for that at this point.
Thank you.
I'm in a weird twilight zone of making a podcast, but I'm also listening to the podcast at the same time. It's a trippy in-between thing for me right now. It's nice. I have my usual for the fellow listeners quick fire questions that are quick to ask, maybe quick to answer, but maybe not necessarily simple. So we should try it if you're ready for it. My first one, and then after that, we're pretty much done. That's the end of it. So my first question is, what would you say is the purpose of your being?
I'm not ready for the questions. Sorry, I couldn't answer that. You didn't ask me if I'm ready.
Understood. Do you need some time or?
Do
you need a piece of chocolate or something? It's like,
yeah, that's a hard question. What are you asking? No, that's a great question. That's a good question. Yeah, you mean like, what's my purpose in life?
I guess so. Yeah, I always say purpose of your being, because purpose of your life, I mean, yeah, it works the same. Whatever works for you.
The first thing I'm thinking about is simply what I think is for everyone else the same, is like, try, be here, get inspired, share your inspirations, and try to leave the world better than in the state you started in this world.
And funnily enough, my second question is, what inspires you?
The Secret of Monkey Island.
Straight and, talk.
Oh, man. Let's talk about more about Monkey Island, because I have... No. But so that's the...
Do you have
the
some time to talk about Monkey Island?
Yeah. So that's the funny answer, but of that part of it is true. But what inspires me a lot is art of... people who just make things that fulfill them, and they mostly make it for themselves, and they dare to be vulnerable in that art and show it publicly. I think this is very strong, and there are parts of me that I haven't shown in my art, but it inspires me when people do that, and I hope I'll be strong to show more. And
you already are. We talked about it a little bit, and there's vulnerability, right? And what you're saying, even in the and the insecurity, kind of a comment I had on my played, but I couldn't fit it anywhere. But since we talked earlier about the kind of imposter syndrome or something, I really wanted to say that there's a lot of wisdom in insecurity, you know, and it's this kind of wavering and not knowing, and is part of making something great, because, you know, the more you know, the more you will see that you don't know. And that's the price for high level stuff. You're like always like, well, I really got no clue. And, so there's nothing wrong with that. I think I think sometimes imposter syndrome is kind of a stupid modern term. I think it's just sometimes you just get insecure because you don't actually know, and that's true. And you just walk through that door, kind of. Well, not just, it's hard, but the way is forward, kind of. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I get that, yeah.
There's actually a book by Alan Watts, and it's called The Wisdom of Insecurity, I think. And it's it's a pretty strange to read. It's sometimes hard to grasp because, well, it deals with insecurity. It's not black and white and clear cut, you know? So, but I enjoyed that. Was a nice read for me. Since then, I just always think, when I feel insecure, I'm like, but there's wisdom in insecurity. So
nice.
I
might read that book.
Yeah, you can look that up. Do you, speaking of books, do you have books that you often recommend or like to give to people? If you have a thing going on with books, that's one of my questions.
I rarely read books at all. And this is like also like a part of me feels bad about that, right? And I rarely read books. I don't have a recommendation.
Okay, then you can take this one from me, right?
This
part is the other way around. What's a beautiful day to you?
I think the simplest answer is one where I get out of bed with a purpose. There are often days where I want to stay in bed, and others where I get up and look forward to the coffee in the morning or the breakfast or, starting a day and being in the moment. I try to be more in the moment. Currently, I'm trying to practice a morning routine and like don't use your phone until after breakfast. And when I get in that, I think this is becoming a great day. It's the beginning of the day that is important. Getting out of bed with purpose, I would say.
Nice. Funny question. What is something that you believe that you think most people would disagree with?
The secret of Monkey Island. Because if you think about it, there's like everyone wants to know the secret of Monkey Island. But if you look at the first game, there's like never the question of what's the secret of Monkey Island. And
okay. mean, I disagree, but I guess that's the point.
But wait, I have so many arguments. Do we have two more hours?
No, sadly no.
Very good.
Sorry, that was a jokey answer, of course, that I half mean serious, but really have to think hard. But I think I often have other answers for that. But
look, you are perfectly entitled to answer with a jokey answer to my serious questions. I mean, I'm delighted. I'm happy. Yes. Yeah. Will you rest your case with the jokey answer, or do you feel the need to give a thoughtful answer? It's up to you. Be our guest.
No, I can't think of one right now. I think I stay with my secret of Monkey Island thing. Yeah. Because if you... No, I'm sorry. I get into that.
Because if you think of it...
Yeah. If you think of it, this episode should have ended already.
I feel very privileged to know, to even get the thought of this, that maybe, you know, the secret itself isn't even the topic, because I know nothing about Monkey Island, and now I feel like I'm in like a advanced Monkey Island stage without ever having played the game. Yeah, so thank you for that.
Nice. I'm glad. Okay.
Couple of questions and then we wrap it up. What is the change you want to see in the world?
More empathy, really. This is what I often think about when it's about politics. I often hear voices that are so self-orientated in their goals, but forget. I mean, empathy, man.
Just empathy, and, man. Aliens,
and,
man.
And just empathy, man. And like, just getting to the, getting people to understand, like, the climate crisis is extremely serious, and you don't hear a lot about this. This frustrates me, and that's just one of the many topics. And I think, like, knowing more about empathy, and I had to learn empathy for many years, really, and it's hard to learn, and and it changed my life.
Yeah, and my follow-up is always, how do you contribute to it, to the change you want to see in the world, of course, and maybe you want to add something there.
Yeah, I often think, like, in bad days, depressing days, looking at the news and climate, I often feel like, okay, I'm just making video games. That is, like, not a lot I'm doing. I should go out more and discuss. And but that is in my blue days. But I actually think my best contribution I can give right now is, like, putting my and Nick's values in our games. And this is what we did in Say No More, which is a game about saying no, but more like about empathy and being nice to each other and listening. Listening is also an option in Say No More, by the way. And I try to put that in the games, and also learn and listen to other voices, and knowing my privilege that I have, and yeah, the games that we make. This is, like, the biggest contribution right now, because I can't argue or discuss. I can't be in an argument. I get so emotional and lose the argument always.
So you focus on what you do best. I think that's important. Everything's a contribution if you have the right intentions in mind. Have you lost anything on your way? You told us about your way. Have you lost anything about on that way that you would like to get back?
I don't know. I don't think so. I remember in my teenage years already thinking about what if I changed an decision I made earlier. What if I did this or that instead of this? Or that? But already then thought, like, what a waste to think about this too hard, because the decisions I did make are a what if question of Mars in another universe, basically. So we only have moving forward, and I don't have I do feel regrets about things, of course, but I always try to look for, okay, what I learned from that, basically.
So it sounds like the answer is something along the lines of no.
Yes. I would say so, yeah. That's a good answer. No.
Okay. No. What is something, last kind of real question here, what's something that you haven't done yet, which you would like to do?
A Monkey Island game. Sorry, that's my serious answer. There's a dream of in the back of my mind, like Nick and I making our games, but if there's a chance, if there's another Monkey Island coming up, you know what I will feel. I explained this, and it will happen again. And
I have to be there.
I have to be there and be involved. And,
good.
This is a dream, but I'm very lucky to have right now what I dreamed of for a while, like making games. Making games.
Making games.
With Nick.
Making games with Nick.
There's the logo.
If you need a soundtrack, let's collaborate on that.
Yes.
Okay, this is so good. And I want you to make a Monkey Island game. Maybe that will be the first one I play. Imagine that. The first Monkey Island game Simon plays is the one that Marius made.
Nice.
Fantastic. Thank you. And my truly last question here is, where can people find you? So on the internet, for example.
I really want to make a website to just collect all these things, but I don't right now. But my Twitter account at MajusArts, MajusArts, is my main thing. And but I'm currently thinking about changing that handle, by the way. But link to MajusArts.
Yeah, okay, Majus Arts, you know where to find. I'm glad that you didn't say, we had a guest previous episode, not going to name any names here, but he just told us the area where he lives in Berlin. And I was like, I can't believe you just doxed yourself, man. Why did you do that? But that was his choice. It was a beautiful moment. So please don't look for Majus in the city and stalk him. Please look for him on the internet where he can voluntarily present himself.
That's awesome. Thanks.
Yeah, that would be nice. Yo, thank you for this great conversation. Thank you guys from my end also for carrying a lot of this. And I could dreamily listen and laugh to myself. It was a fantastic time for me personally. So on my note, thank you very much to you guys.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the invite. It was really, really fun.
Thank you, Marius. Thank you, Simon. Thank you, audience. See you next time.
See you next time.
Bye.
Goodbye. Hi there, Simon here. Thanks for listening to this episode. If you like what you hear here and you would like to hear more here, feel free to follow or to subscribe to the podcast on whichever platform you get your audio fix. We appreciate you and we promise you to bring you many more insightful conversations with fantastic games industry guests from Berlin and from all over Europe. Thank you very much and see you very soon. Bye bye.
Hi there. Before you go, this is Florian, project manager for GamesNet Berlin Europe. If you want to stay connected to the network, find out more about upcoming events and links to other MediaNet initiatives, you can visit us at gamesnetberlin.eu and subscribe to our newsletter. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast, and until next time.